Club. Driving. No purchase necessary.
You're listening to Radio Free Urbanism.
Welcome back to Radio Free Urbanism. We are delighted to have you here today. This podcast is about urbanism and stuff. My name is Alex Williams, and I am thrilled and exuberantly delighted to be here solely with my two regular co-hosts. We've had a string of other people and stuff, which we love other people, don't get me wrong, but sometimes it's just nice to be us together. And so we'll start off with Ethan Meyer. Say hello.
Hello, gang. How are we doing today? And now we're going to move on to Nick Laporte over on the other side.
That's me. Welcome back, everybody. I'm just really glad to be here with my co-host. This is it's been the middle of February was the last time it was just.
Can
I think
you
the three
believe
of us.
It?
Yeah,
that
so this is fun.
Yeah, that is crazy. Although I have really been enjoying having like the diversity of guests on and kind of having just like other perspectives and other people and getting to know other people in this online urbanist space. And so we're also excited because we've got several coming up as well. And so it's kind of going to become like a regular part of the show, but it's fun to just be back with, OG3, the triumvirate.
And it's been so casual.
Yeah.
I wasn't even paying attention when you hit record. I was just like,
yeah,
like just so relaxed.
Yeah.
It's good.
We're hanging out. We've already been chatting for a half an hour before we even hit record today, just having a good time. Bashing developments we don't like and stuff like that. So,
yeah, pretty much.
We're going to start off with Nick here, who's going to start us off with some update he's got, something he wants to
so
say.
So I saw something on Reddit, and we all know the words. We know NIMBY, not in my backyard. We know YIMBYs, yes, in my backyard. But this is a new one. This is the word of the day today, which is banana, which means build absolutely nothing anywhere near anyone. Which is like hyper NIMBY. I saw that on Reddit. I thought, I'm going to keep that one in the back of my brain just for,
for good discussions on the Bay Area. That's exactly what it's for.
Pretty much.
And for people wondering, it is also a delicious fruit with a questionable texture. So banana.
It's very fair.
But I have one more thing to share as well. And this is something I helped with Vision Zero Vancouver, and you might have seen it went absolutely viral.
Mm-hmm. Ever feel unsafe crossing a crosswalk? Cars cutting off your right of way? That's why Vision Zero Vancouver is excited to introduce Bricks, a new pilot program to enhance pedestrian safety. Simply grab a brick at one of our designated stands, enter the crosswalk with the brick clearly visible to surrounding vehicles, and cross the street with the full confidence that you and everyone around you is aware of your ability to protect yourself. We believe bricks will be a major disruptor to the pedestrian safety industry. Although speed bumps and other traffic calming measures do play a critical role in keeping pedestrians safe, they rely on political leadership. And frankly, who can rely on that? What you can rely on is a concrete solution. As the saying goes, sometimes the best defense is a brick.
Yeah, so that was the voice of Yute Lee. And if you don't know him, he has a YouTube channel called About Here. It's about Vancouver and other places as well. And It was such an amazing thing to come together. I did all the filming and all of it was planned by Vision Zero. Some of the people who work over there or volunteer over there at Vision Zero. And it's just amazing how well it turned out, but even more so how viral it went like immediately. Even the day we were filming before April 1st, somebody took a picture and a tweet went viral about it. So it's been wild to see the responses, positive and negative, and some people taking it really seriously, not realizing it was like an April Fool stunt.
Yeah.
But just crazy. I can't believe how successful it was. It's really cool. It was on the news several times. I had random colleagues ask me if I heard about it. And even my mother-in-law, all the way in Ontario, emailed my wife and said, "Hey, I saw that now they want you to have bricks to cross streets in Vancouver." it went so viral. It's wild.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
It did really well. And I didn't know you were involved with that, but it came across my feed too. And the comments are so interesting on this thing because the video is saying, cross with a brick, right? And I've lived in places where you are told to cross with a flag before in the States. And it is wild to me, this expectation that, every single day as part of your normal activities of being a healthy, non-sedentary human, you're supposed to put your life at risk, but also use some sort of warning alert system to let people driving cars know where you're at. And that somehow the brick shows pretty well that they're paying attention. They just don't care to stop until they're worried about their property damage. Yeah. So it's pretty telling. It's a telling campaign.
Yeah. And I think Mike Pasternak of Strong Towns did a video about the flags not too long ago. It was really well done. Mm-hmm. So I think it's definitely a playoff of that, how undignified it is for you to have to wave a flag around across the street. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to be a bigger conversation about having safer infrastructure in the first place. Anyway,
it's definitely great too that it broke the, I like calling it like the urbanist like community bubble. I feel like this post really broke it. I saw it on my feed. My sister saw it on her feed. It actually, it really kind of blew up. I mean, like it really did like cross that like membrane of the urbanist community and into a more, you know, general audience. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
Even if it is a joke post, you know, but still like it really does show like the absurdity of crossing the street with a flag because, yeah, also like just like Alex, I've done that. I've lived in a community with that. And it's ridiculous. I can't believe that that's ever been thought of as a solution.
Yeah, it's honestly silly. And we are going to get a bit into something later on that kind of shows that urbanism breaking out of that bubble. Because right now, the urbanist bubble is still kind of small. But more and more people are talking about it, and we'll get into that later. But Ethan, our friend Ethan, has some great news.
Ladies and gentlemen, so for all of you who watch our podcast, we are gratefully thankful for that, and especially for our viewers on YouTube who have gotten us to over 100 subscribers. So welcome all of our new viewers. Thank you so much for subscribing. And just for anybody listening on any other platforms, if you want to come over to YouTube, you can see all of our beautiful faces over here and all the visuals that we bring up. But you know what? In some cases, not the greatest, but you know, we're very appreciative of your support. We really appreciate you all, you know, supporting the channel, liking, leaving great comments, and subscribing, and also checking out our Patreon too. All much appreciated. Thank you folks so much. And now we're going to pass it to some news that Alex has.
Yeah. So some people might have noticed that we released a bonus episode yesterday, which has done really, really well as well. It's our best performing video to date because it's kind of talking about something pretty interesting. And as a bonus episode, rather than just talking about the news and we kind of bring these news stories and chat about them, we got to do a deep dive. And it was myself and you might remember Haley Jepsen, who hosted with us a few weeks back. We got to have a conversation with Christian Lenhart, who was super gracious, super cool guy. And a civil engineer, and he told us about the Rio Grande plan, which is this cool plan for rail in Salt Lake City that kind of brings back this historic train station and kind of rejuvenates the area around it, and also improves pedestrian safety, improves connections around the city as well as around the state and around the country. So definitely an episode worth checking out. We're going to do more bonus episodes in the future where we talk with specific people about specific subjects and dive deeper into things. Also, I will be posting some updates as we go forward about the Rio Grande plan because it's a citizen-led thing, but the mayor even has, Christian told us, the mayor and one of the counselors has a mug with the Rio Grande plan kind of graphic design on it.
The mayor requested it.
Yes.
The mayor requested it.
Yeah. So, and like it's being talked about, in the state legislature and stuff. So there's actually like there's some wheels turning, but, we need some other urbanists and people around, especially in Salt Lake City area, to be the grease on those wheels to really get those trains moving and get this plan going ahead as a real plan. The city is doing a study this year to kind of see how this could work and what people are looking for in it. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Also, RCG upzoning in Calgary. I'll say again, if you're in Calgary, we need all the people we can get to come and speak at City Hall. If you're not comfortable speaking, you can call in. If you're not comfortable calling in or you're not around or unavailable, you can submit a comment for the public record. I can help you through all of that. Just send me a message on Instagram at Humane Cities. You can email me, humanecities@gmail.com. I will personally make sure your voice is heard in support of RCG upzoning or against RCG upzoning as well. Honestly, if you're against it, I will still show you how to sign up, but please don't be against it because this is going to be good for the long-term health of the city. And with that out of the way, Ethan, I want to pass it back to you again for a news story.
We're just passing stories back between me and Alex, you know? Yeah. Nick's not going to get a word in this first 15 minutes. I think that's pretty standard, though, isn't it?
That's pretty standard. That's okay. Mostly me and Ethan talking.
Yeah. Well, you know, always, folks, whenever we start out a story with me, it always seems to be something to do with trains or light rail or, you know, my obsession with public transit. But, you know, that relates wonderfully to our show. And recently we got some, well, I mean, it's not super recent news, but we're coming up on a wonderful date here because this month we're actually going to see the opening of a good chunk of light rail within the city of Seattle. So for those of you who don't know, Seattle is currently on kind of a big plan to build out their transit network throughout the city. And they've started that with Line 1 at the moment, which is kind of a north-south running line that runs between the airport and some of the neighborhoods just to the north of downtown Seattle. But this new line, Line 2, is going to be running on the other side of the lake. It's going to be running through Bellevue, Washington. That's the first point of it. So that portion is going to be opening up in Bellevue, Washington on April 27th, 2024. So it's going to be a Saturday in a few weeks from now. It's going to be really exciting. Sound Transit's likely going to do some sort of exciting, you know, opening thing for it. It should be really exciting. And if you're in the Seattle area, I highly recommend going. It is on a Saturday. So, you know, if you have weekends off, that's open. But this is only the first part of the Line 2 opening. The second part will be a connection over Mercer Island and the lake between Bellevue and Seattle. I'm blanking out on the name of that. And that will connect to Line 1 and downtown Seattle with this whole system. If you can see this map that Alex has brought up right here, that's the section that will not be opening until 2025. But this blue section that's highlighted will be opening in a few weeks from now. And this will actually be really good for connectivity. I mean, obviously, it's going to be even better once that bridge crossing the lake, Lake Washington, opens. But still, regardless, this is going to be big because there is a lot of people who work in Bellevue, especially downtown Bellevue. And just bringing commuters into there just to start out the line will be really helpful. This also isn't the only extension that's opening in, you know, soon. There are other plans to extend transit. They have a whole transit map plan that they have coming out eventually. Well, it's actually out. I'll pull it up next. But it is really exciting to see these kind of extensions. You guys have any thoughts on this?
I'm stoked. Oh, Nick, we can't hear you.
Sorry. Obviously, Yeah, this is really, really cool. I love visiting Seattle. So to see better transit connections across the water, especially, is going to be really important to, you know, freeing up some of that congestion that they suffer from because the highways get absolutely wrecked.
I bet.
Through there.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And you can build, I think too, what's so important to remember is even though like a bridge costs a lot of money, whether you're building it for trains, pedestrians, for cars, whatever. But a train can carry so many more people across the bridge. Like the savings that you're going to have in the long run from building this bridge, because you could build like two rails on a bridge and carry, you know, 16 lanes worth of traffic or more, right? In and out of the area. So it's so much more efficient. So that's fantastic. I've never really been to Seattle. I've been through the airport. I use their little
still counts. The little I'd connection. Scratch it off on the map.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll get my penny out and scratch it. But yeah, I'm stoked for this. That's super exciting. I think we might have to do a live show from Seattle sometime when the whole thing is open. So is this only, this is the Link Light Rail. There's already Line 1. This is Line 2. So that's all they have so far, as far as light rail in Seattle?
For light rail, yes, but Seattle is a very multimodal city when it comes to transit. So there's also the Seattle Sounder, which is kind of a more commuter-based rail transit system that runs between Tacoma and downtown Seattle.
Okay.
And then there's also an extension up to Everett, but it doesn't have a whole lot of frequency, mostly due to rail interference. But they also do have the rapid ride buses around the city, which are pretty frequent. Bigger stop spacing between the stops, kind of bus routes that provide, you know, better bus transit between areas. And then there's also some other little things as well, too, transit wise. But they have trolley buses there. They have the ferries around, you know, the Sound to connect other communities. And weirdly enough, they have a monorail.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did see that. That was in one of City Nerd's videos, right? Was that who did like try to hit every?
No. That was
City Beautiful.
City Beautiful. That was Dave. Yeah,
that's right. Well, I'm super stoked for this. Do you know if there's any particular reason why they did this section first? Because it's the next section that's going to connect up to line one.
Yeah, I think that they're opening this in phases just because it was easier to construct that first portion earlier. And I think they'd rather get the transit open, you know, piecemeal rather than getting it all opened at once.
Yeah.
Because regardless, Bellevue is still a huge job center for transit.
Right.
And it's going to be super exciting to see this sort of transit connection open. But yeah, you can see it right here. We have the Sound Transit. I believe it's called Link Light Rail, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Like the specific name. But it is very exciting to see that these connections are happening. They've been doing test runs on this for the past month or so. So if you see trains running at the moment, they're not taking passengers yet.
Yeah.
But come April 27th, you'll be able to take it.
That's cool. Man. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited for our live show from Seattle.
That's going to be great.
We have a long list of live shows we want to do. First, we got to figure out how to do a live show from our studios. And then we can figure out how to do a live show on the road.
At this point, we're just copying Red Line Radio and just doing a live show on the transit.
Yes. Yeah. So that'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. You could ask your questions. We could take people on tours. That'd be awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Any other thoughts on this, guys?
More train good.
More train good. I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alex, let's roll over into your story now.
Thanks. Nick, you're going to have to wait a little second before we get to you, Nick. So for my story today, I've got a bit of an announcement from the federal government. Justin called me up himself and he gave me this scoop. Just kidding. This is coming from this is from the Canadian Press. I've got a link to the National Post story that they did on it. It's $15 billion announced for funding to build another 30,000 apartments within the next 10 years, which, of course, as you know, is definitely not enough to solve the housing crisis. But it is something. I believe this is also largely a loan program. And so we're kind of getting more and more. A lot of people, there's some, I mean, of course, there's going to be criticism for any project. You know, could be vote buying, but I'll take vote buying if it helps us in our situation. Still doesn't mean I'll vote for them, but I will take the stuff. And then also, some people have said that this is kind of a provincial issue. So this is kind of Canadian politics is interesting. There are very specific things that each level of government deals with, and each level of government can get a little bit defensive or protective or aggressive when they feel like their purview is kind of being taken over. And so some of the comments on this have been, well, this is a provincial issue. Why is the federal government spending so much money, time, and effort dealing with housing? I'll tell you why. The provinces aren't doing enough. That is why. I've got here the little booklet, the little note from the provincial government of Alberta. And let's see. Okay, so we've got some funding for schools, funding for light rail. I'm very excited for that. Universities, we've got medical care, all of this stuff. There is nothing on this about housing. There's stuff I like. There's stuff I like on this, but there's nothing about housing. So, of course, the federal government has to do something about housing because we're in a housing crisis. And for some reason, some of the provincial governments of all political stripes have not been doing kind of their responsibility, and they've been offloading a lot of this to the cities and to the federal government. That's my gripe. That's my rant. We're not doing it how we're supposed to be doing it. I'm glad it's happening, but there are a lot of cracks, and I feel like some people aren't necessarily pulling their weight.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like the fact for a long time, too, the federal government in Canada was saying this is not our responsibility. Housing is not our responsibility. And I disagree with that. In some ways it is, especially when we're talking about immigration and stuff. And you can say what you want about that. That's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, to see a premier and their party not take responsibility for the housing in their province is just fucking ridiculous.
Yep. Yep.
Not voting for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm very happy here in BC. We have David Eby. He's like the most wholesome, real politician I've ever seen in Canada. Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, he seems like a guy who's actually his entire life been trying to work to make the place he lives better.
Yeah.
He's not some guy, rich guy who owns a bunch of properties. I think he bought his first house like a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he's actually been working on it. It's like every couple weeks, there's a new housing strategy, something more to the housing strategy to make housing more affordable in BC.
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau was here just a few weeks ago to bolster that. And I can't remember exactly what they were talking about, but it's one level after another. So if you live in BC, just pay attention. You might want to vote for NDP again for our provincial party here, because they're actually working to make housing better for everybody, not just the homeowners right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And I do want to like highlight again that this isn't like a one side of the aisle issue. There are liberal governments in Canada as well, in different provinces, that have offloaded a lot of these responsibilities on cities. And there's conservative governments that have done the same. It's not a one aisle issue. Just to note that, so that people don't feel like we're being overly harsh. I will criticize everybody. So I have so many more thoughts on that. And it's great to hear that things are happening in BC. Of course, BC and Ontario. And when I say BC and Ontario, I'm talking about Vancouver and Toronto. not necessarily the rest of those provinces, but Vancouver and Toronto have the biggest housing crises in the country. Fortunately, cities like Calgary, Edmonton, and I don't know, whatever other cities exist in Canada, have seen what is about to happen to them in these other places. So much so, like, these problems are so bad that Nick shared this with me, and I think this is from a while ago. This has kind of been on for a bit, but there's this student who is flying 687 kilometers from Calgary to go to school at UBC in Vancouver because it is so expensive. So the student is paying $1,200 a month to fly rather than paying $2,100 a month for a one-bedroom apartment in Vancouver.
I feel like that's already outdated. $2,100 for one bedroom.
Oh yeah,
that's a pretty good deal now.
In Vancouver, that's a steal. Even in Calgary,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it is absolutely wild. And this is, I feel like this whole segment is me ranting about things. But this is
wait, is that that's Canadian dollars? I just need to make sure.
Yeah, this is Canadian dollars.
Okay.
So this is part of the problem when we're talking about these costs. In Calgary, I live in a single family home. We have a lack of housing variety. I would love to live in an apartment, but I cannot because there's not enough supply. There's just not enough. We need to build more housing variety. Some people have told me in our conversations talking about upzoning and stuff, they've said, oh, well, why, you know, like, we need single family homes because we want families. And I said, well, no one can have families because it's too expensive. And the people who are taking up single family homes are students. They're young adults. I live here with three roommates in this single family home. And I don't need it. I'd be fine to give this up for a family if there was an apartment that I could move into and afford. So this is part of the problem. So that's why I'm glad that this funding coming from the federal government is largely focused on apartment buildings, because we need that variety. We are lacking that variety. And so hopefully the situation improves. There's a few things that keep me optimistic, but I've been ranting. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this here.
Well, obviously the federal government funding is fantastic. That's absolutely what we need right now. But it's bigger than that. Like we said, it's the provincial level, but also municipal level. It all needs to be addressed. And this has been a long time coming, and it's not something that's going to be fixed overnight. It's not going to be fixed in 5 years. Mm-hmm. You might start to see the fruit of the labor in 10 years, and that's when we'll start to see this change. But again, who knows what other things are going to be happening in the world and in our country to change that situation. But back to the guy from Calgary, like flying twice a week, well, actually four times a week, two round trips a week is insane. Like, imagine getting up, you get hitting on a 6 a.m. flight, getting to YVR, taking the SkyTrain down to Broadway, getting on the 99 B line all the way down to UBC, going to your classes, reverse the thing back home to Calgary.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Super commuting.
Oh,
like,
man.
It's that absolutely bananas.
That reminds me of I think it was like a Wall Street Journal writer who super commuted to New York City from Columbus.
Wow.
Here, I gotta pull it up.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah. See, yeah. This is what we're talking about. Like, when we want to build 15-minute cities, it's not about like heaping people in. It's about just like allowing people to get to work in like a timely, affordable manner, right? Like,
yeah,
geez,
allowing people to not have to travel insanely far to get to the things they need.
Yeah. So what's this story here, Ethan?
So this story here is it's probably the more insane version, but it's a Wall Street Journal writer by the name of Chip Cutter, and he commutes I believe it's like once or twice a week from Columbus, Ohio to New York City.
Wow. That's wild. The fact that that you can live in or work in a city and not afford to live there. Like, isn't that messed up? Who is it that thinks this is a good idea? I don't think anybody thinks that's a good idea.
I want more single family homes only, nothing else.
But and it's
Alberta,
not
more like one giant subdivision, because that's what I want it to be.
More like one giant subdivision.
Come on, we know who it is. It's the people in power, and it's the people who already have property. And I can understand their feeling. Like imagine living in a place, having your kids grow up there, having lived there for almost 30 years, and almost all of your savings are invested into this one property, you're going to be worried about change in your neighborhood. You're going to worry about that.
Yeah.
And I can understand where that comes from.
The one thing, though, is that their home values have been outpacing inflation for so long that people see homes as a 100% method of securing, their future of financial safety, rather than it just being a place for people to live. So when that's been going on for decades, you have this mindset of the home is basically a giant stock.
Yeah.
It's a giant mutual fund.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't want its value to ever go down ever. Because if it goes down, then my whole investment goes down.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you start basically essentially creating a housing Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
Much like Strong Towns talked about, but theirs was with infrastructure, not with home value.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. So you bring up something important about, like, you don't want it to go down. But the thing about investments is there's the potential for it to go down. There's always some sort of risk. And your home is an unrealized asset. And how many people want to stay in their home, right? Like, you want to stay in your home. You want to stay in your community. But if you sell your home in order to get that equity out, in order to get that money from your quote-unquote investment, then where are you going to go if you want to stay in your community? Are your kids going to put you in some home somewhere, right? Like, this is why we need mixed-use developments so that you can stay in your community. And guess what? If your home does appreciate, then you can get the money out. But in the meantime, if you're planning to just stay in your home, it's just an unrealized asset. You don't have that money. And you also didn't make that money. I want to highlight here as well, like, we're talking about, like, I don't like using the word NIMBY because NIMBYs are always people who care about their community and care about their city. And I think when you call them a NIMBY, you're like delegitimizing any of their real concerns. And they're real because they feel them, right? Because it's important to them. And I don't like delegitimizing people's feelings and people's experiences, right? But I want to like highlight as well that not everybody feels this way. Here's some data from this is from Abacus Data, which is a firm here in Canada that does a bunch of data-y things, and they say that it's 36%. It's only 36% of people over 60. Because, you know, a lot of people, when they think NIMBY, they're thinking old people. But it's only 36% of people over 60 are opposed to some gentle density coming into their area. And it's still, like, homeowners, again, 36% oppose. So, yeah, here it says, the strongest resistance to gentle density is one's immediate vicinity stems from homeowners at 36% opposing and those aged 60 and above at also 36% opposing. So it's like most people are comfortable with this. And so I think the important thing is that we get out the people who are saying yes and who are fighting for something and who do want change or who are at the very least comfortable with change. I'm in a choir. And most of the people in choir, like the average age of this choir is probably 70 years old. And so I'm around a lot of elderly people a lot of the time, and lots of them have become good friends. And they have expressed a lot of these concerns to me in talking about the RCG upzoning. They're worried about shadows and they're worried about parking. But if you have the conversation with people, if you talk to people, if you communicate with people who are maybe outside of your immediate sphere, who think a little differently than the rest of the people who like have the same algorithm or newsfeed, you can actually communicate that actually, you know, it's interesting. Fewer Gen Zs drive than any previous generation. Lots of Gen Zs, like Ethan, you don't even have your license, right?
Nope.
Yeah. I've got sisters who haven't bothered to get their license because they live in a city. They're like, why would I? Who cares? I take the bus, right? And so I think, communicating, talking to people, and trying to kind of cross that bridge and share other perspectives is really important when you're trying to build a community, because, just like we talk about NIMBYs, quote unquote NIMBYs, when we say you're not the only one who lives here, get used to some change. We're also not the only one who lives here, and I don't think we should blanket outright dismiss people's ideas. That's my fifth rant of the day. So I'm gonna let you guys talk. I'm in a mood.
Good. I like that. I like when Alex is in a mood, because usually, you know, we haven't had a proper wug mug in a while, and I got one coming this episode. But yeah, I like to see the fire in your eyes.
Thanks. Beautiful. I appreciate that.
Mugs went from scheduled rants to interpretive, like mid-show rants, and yeah. I'm personally loving it.
I just to kind of wrap that up. Let's start fighting for something, and also kind of engage in deeper conversation with our community members rather than just kind of dismissing people if they don't dream of the same bikeable, walkable utopia that we do.
And you know what? This is what my wife always tells me, and I really try to take it to heart, but it's really hard. She always says, you know what? You're going to have disagreements with people, and there's just never going to be changing their mind. Never, ever. And you know what? You have to accept it sometimes. Mm-hmm. However, you could still find a place to have a conversation. I feel like that's where you need to start from.
Yeah.
But again, you might not. I've met some people, man. I remember when I was working in Alberta many years ago, this guy who was my colleague, and he was just so stereotypical, big house owner, drove a big truck, and just didn't give a fuck about anybody else. And there was I could never get into his head and figure out why he didn't care about his own impact on anybody else.
Hmm.
Why does it matter? Hmm. If I can afford it, doesn't matter. If I can pay for it, I can do that. I'm allowed to do that because I bought that thing. I bought this giant piece of land. Doesn't matter if that's going to affect, you know, the ecology of my environment or my neighbors. If I own it and it's mine, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And that was his perspective. And there's tons of people like that, right?
Oh, there's tons.
There might not be any change in their mind at all about anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the best we can do is have a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully engage people who are supportive but not actively supportive. I think you'd be shocked how many people are supportive of things but just aren't active about it. Because it's easy, you know, we get fired up about different things, but to get fired up in support of something, I think also matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, if we're done with that, if you guys are tired of me yapping, I'll send it over to Ethan here.
Send it over to me.
Or is it you?
Or are we just going to completely skip out on Nick?
He's like, Nick can't have anything today.
Nick can't have shit today.
We're pushing him off the show.
this is
the guests, and Nick immediately loses all influence on the podcast, apparently. Yeah. Can't have shit on Radio Free Urbanism.
You know what we missed? Okay, this is a future episode. We didn't mention in the episode. We already recorded it.
Yeah.
But we had Rachel Leonardo of Studio Leonardo on. It was the first time we had a majority American podcast, and it didn't even get mentioned. I was
surprised. I was expecting you to say something when I was editing it, when I was scheduling it up.
I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
I was waiting for Ethan to, because I was like, you know, I'm going to not, you know, let it be known. I was like, we'll keep it secret, and then maybe people won't realize it. But I guess I said it now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, now you said it.
It's out.
Yeah,
it's out.
Yeah, this next story is coming from Mr. Beast. If you haven't heard from him, you probably live under a rock, and that's okay. But what he did, as he does a lot of the times, is something really wonderful and altruistic. He gave away 600 bikes, or at least is giving away 600 bikes. I don't know if he's done the 600 yet, but 600 e-bikes from Electric. If you don't know Electric, great brand, have awesome bikes. I know Ethan has an electric e-bike, right?
No comment as to maybe future plans with e-bikes.
Okay.
No comment. I love my e-bike. I'm not going to say what brand I have, but I love my e-bike.
All right. Anyway, Mr. Beast, gave away these 600 e-bikes, starting with this one woman who has to walk some outrageous amount of distance to get to her low-paying job. So she got this e-bike to help her mobility. They also gave her, I think, $12,000, and she was actually, they gave her $5,000, and she was planning to give most of it away back to her village. I think, where was it? Somewhere in the Central America. I can't remember where it was. Anyway, they gave her an extra $7,000 to give away to her village. I think it was Guatemala, actually.
Wow.
But what I really liked about this video was that he really put focus on how important it is to have just proper transportation to the places you're going and how that can affect your life when you don't have that mobility. And they also focus on another fellow where he spends 3 hours a day getting to his job. And that's time he takes away from his family. But more importantly, being so low income takes away from the hours he could possibly be working too. Mm-hmm. So I just like that. Again, he's one of the biggest, he is the biggest YouTuber in the world. I don't know how many millions of subscribers he has, but the amount of views he gets is insane. And how much he's got, this is just his philanthropy channel. It's got 23 million followers. This video already has 3 million views from a few days ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's really important to realize that, and especially in very car dependent places, how, okay, I don't want to get into a wug mug right now, but when people complain about taking away certain things for cars, how that's like, oh, what about the poor people? It's like, no, let's build the transit so that they don't have to rely on that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not an asset to have a car.
Yeah.
It's a liability in a lot of cases.
E-bikes are maybe some of the greatest assets that people can have, living car free. Mm-hmm. I mean, knowing this brand, I mean, you'll get easily 25 miles of range. From these models that I've seen, somewhere around there. And they're really actually pretty affordable and pretty easy to maintain as well, too. So, I mean, yeah, and they're also fast.
Yeah.
You don't break a sweat riding these things. You're going, you have that mobility. It's basically like having a car for short trips without having a car, without all the hassle of it. And it's really, this is really exciting to see. I mean, this level of philanthropy from Mr. Beast is, I mean, it's always great to see, but, you know, it is really exciting. These are 600 people that are going to have this life-changing tool to be able to get between different locations a lot faster than they could have before.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot more reliably, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But back to what I was saying about car dependency and how that affects people, especially people in poverty, it's an interesting conversation because I'm reading this book right now and it's called City Limits. I can't remember the author of the book, but it's about highway expansion, right? And they're talking about dismantling highways and the fact that this is in Houston, they were talking about, or is it Austin? I can't remember. It was in a Texan city and they're talking about removing this highway. And the problem is 75% of the people who use that highway are from the south of the city. And even though the highway's in the north end, who lives in the south? It's a lot of poor people. And it would negatively affect all of those people. Mm-hmm. So I can see that double-edged sword of car dependency and how people get stuck in this loop where they have to have a car. But if you take away that ability to get to where they're going in their car, it's going to affect them even worse, right?
Yeah.
So it's about replacing stuff with other stuff, having those abilities to, mm-hmm. to right, just options, the transit, micromobility, et cetera.
Megan Kimball is the
Megan
author
Kimball. Thank
of
you.
City Limits, Infrastructure, Inequality, and the Future of America's Highways.
Great book so far. I've only read about, I don't know, 30% of it, but it really focuses on the human experience of car dependency and how highways affect people, especially people who are marginalized.
Yeah. E-bikes, e-bikes are the pizza of mobility. It's the great equalizer.
Love it.
Yeah, they're wonderful. I don't think anybody could ride an e-bike and hate it. You know, I like
the moment you feel that pedal assist kick in is the most mind-changing moment anybody ever has riding a bike.
Yeah.
I swear. Yeah. It's as soon as you know how to ride a bike and then you hop on an e-bike, you pedal, you feel the pedal assist kick in. It really is like it's something that you just can't replicate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to hear from our listeners if anybody's got any good experiences with e-bikes. You can comment on the YouTube video or email us at radiofreeurbanism@gmail.com. That'd be kind of an interesting little poll to do about e-bikes and experiences with them and maybe some conversion stories. I know I'm converted to e-bikes. It's pretty high on my shopping list this year.
Yeah, they're incredible.
Definitely.
It's funny. I was talking to somebody who's in the Strong Towns group here in Vancouver recently, and he was talking about how he has an aversion to all of the electric assist micromobility devices.
Hmm.
And it's not that he hates them or thinks they're bad, but he thinks for himself, he's like, I want to stay on my acoustic bicycle as long as I possibly can just to keep in shape. And I was like, that's great. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like riding my acoustic bike too, but for commuting and for like getting around, it's, you know, like it's just so easy. And I realized I didn't know I lived on a hill until I was riding my bike the other day. And I was like, why is this getting progressively more difficult? Like there's just
deceptive hills. Yeah.
Slight incline, hills. You know?
Yeah.
And
you feel that slight incline on a bike.
Yeah. Yeah. But in a car walking, I never noticed it. And then riding my bike, I was like, oh shoot, this sucks.
I mean, it's the reason why I transferred from being, you know, a part-time fair weather rider of two wheels to work to becoming full-time on two wheels to get to work was that I got an electric scooter and I was like, I could do this year round. And it's not that I transferred more onto the electricity. It's the fact that I actually started biking my acoustic bike more than I did before right?
Yeah.
So it's done that to me as well, which is awesome. And here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are. That's what it took.
This is a great story. I'm glad Mr. Beast kind of like took that out to the world a little bit more to show, because cars are expensive. And even if, like, I bought my car for $500, but it wound up costing me $40,000 over 8 years. If I bought a brand new e-bike, like a nice e-bike for like $5,000, I promise you it would not inflate itself to $40,000 over 8 years.
You could pretty much buy a new e-bike every year and throw out the old one and it'd still be cheaper.
Yeah, actually. It's wild. It's wild. Yeah. Any other thoughts on this story?
No, I think we should go to the listener mail.
Yeah, I think we should go to the listener mail as well.
All right, Ethan, take it away.
So wonderful. This listener mail comes in from our listener, Raphael K., and they said, "Hey guys, I'm emailing you because I came across a Business Insider article about cul-de-sac. This is the community in Tempe, Arizona, and thought you might be interested in reading and discussing it on the next podcast. The title of the article is, I moved to an Arizona oasis that banned cars. It's as dreamy as I expected, but it can be a struggle to venture outside of it." And then they commented, "Here's my thoughts on it. The person who was interviewed for the article used all the correct urbanist talking points, and although I think the article conveys his message well, I have trouble with the title itself. As you may know, cul-de-sac didn't ban cars. It was built from the ground up to be a car-free community. So I think the title should have been used language that truthfully describes what cul-de-sac is, such as car-free oasis, walkable oasis, prohibits cars, or where cars aren't allowed. It could have also left out the last part, quote, but it can be a struggle to venture outside of it, resulting in a shorter, more readable title. Instead, the title quickly casts doubt to the readers on what many urbanists would consider good urbanism. In fact, the title prepared me to expect to read an article that discredits cul-de-sac, which thankfully it doesn't. I don't have a specific question to ask, but was wondering if you could share, one, what you think mischaracterizations can do to stifle any progress that's been made. Two, whether you think such choice of words is intentional, ignorant, or otherwise. And three, what do you think we can do about it? Best regards, Raphael." Wow, that is quite the comment, I must say, yeah. Raphael.
I think it's really hard to answer those because you have to dive into the personal motivations of the writer or the editor, whoever made the title itself. Blatantly, the title's wrong. It's just not right. And even in the article itself, on the first bullet points here, it says, John Roberts Rodriguez moved to cul-de-sac, a car-free community in Arizona. So it's not that, again, like Raphael said, not that cars were banned, it's that it was a car-free community built that way. Mm-hmm. This is just an example of sensationalized titles, right? It's to get clicks. That's their ultimate goal, is to get people to click on it, to get into the article. Do they care about reading it? I'm not entirely sure, but yeah. It's sensationalized titling.
Yeah, it really is sensationalized titling to drive engagement at the end of the day when it comes to it. And I mean, this is definitely more on the misleading side when it comes to this sort of sensationalization. You could tell they made this specifically to get people to comment and share this on Twitter, Reddit, wherever, you know, you read your articles. But it was definitely made in that sensationalist way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll say, you know, never attribute to malice what can be attributed to, you know, ignorance, stupidity, or whatever. I don't know if anybody had any, you know, things, but yeah, it was to drive clicks. I will say though, that mischaracterizations can stifle progress. And they do, and we've seen how they do. Mischaracterizations about what is a 15-minute city. Mischaracterizations, this is one I've been coming across, about what is a luxury apartment or a luxury townhome. Luxury is a marketing term. It is not necessarily a description that only the rich and fancy can live there. Every apartment building is going to say it is luxury. There's been some concerns about that, because people say, don't build these luxury apartments because the poors that you want to live there won't live there anyways. It's like, listen, every apartment building is going to say it's a luxury apartment, no matter how affordable it is.
Yeah.
You know,
even luxury living.
Yeah. even if it's selling like below market rate, they're still going to say it's luxurious. And same thing, like in Calgary, it's been the RCG stuff. A lot of people don't realize that the height limit on RCG development is 11 meters. And the height limit on an R1 development is 10 meters. But it has been mischaracterized to be this massive building that will be built on your block. And so I do think mischaracterizations do hurt, whether they're in a headline or not. And obviously, yeah, this is made to drive clicks. A lot of people just read the headline and say they banned cars when, like you said, Raphael, they didn't ban cars. It was built to be without cars. So I think Raphael's pretty spot on here with most of this commentary.
I would agree as well, too.
As far as what could be done about it, nothing.
you'd have to go in and change the complete, you know, media landscape of how media operates and how social media operates. And, you know, that's just kind of, I mean, I hate to say that you can't do anything about it, but Nick is right on that. You really can't do anything about that. You'd have to get people to stop clicking on engagement bait. So don't click on engagement bait.
I think you're wrong. I think you can do something about it. Ethan, you specifically.
I can?
You, yes. I'm pointing down at Ethan. Ethan always ends up below me. Right now he's beside me. What are you going to do? You're going to keep making your YouTube videos. You're going to keep making your Instagram videos. I think that the space, the online urbanist space has done so much to educate people, where people are just like regularly talking about these things. We have strong towns groups in the city. People understand intuitively. I talk to friends across the political spectrum coming from crazy different perspectives on the world. And so many people, their perspective on car-free living and their perspective on walkable cities and how we should build our infrastructure and transit, it is changing. And so I think, what can we do about it? We can be proactively educating people rather than reactively educating people. We need to be out there talking to people instead of just responding to comments and concerns, when some new conspiracy theory crops up. We need to be actively involved in making our cities a better place.
And there, if you want a better example of titling, you know, some work about cul-de-sac, surprisingly, I think NBC did a pretty good job of naming their title. They did it on a video coverage. It said, "A new rental community is the nation's first designed for car-free living," which I think personally is a better title.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah, I think.
But can we address the point of the article in that Raphael says he struggled to venture outside of it?
Yeah. Right.
Life at cul-de-sac is great, but he still has to deal with the car-dependent world outside its gates.
Right.
And I don't think this is just a problem with cul-de-sac necessarily, right? Obviously, they have a transit stop. The train stops like right there, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's there, but yes, the world outside there is very car-dependent. We're talking about Arizona here, so it's going to be super car-dependent. And it's not just a problem for them, but also other places as well. That's just the nature of it. And this comes back to what Chuck says from Strong Towns. And this is kind of his debate against high-speed rail. He talks about that. And he says we should focus on the local places first, which I think is pretty fair.
Yeah.
And the fact that going from one place to another and not having that same experience completely changes the way you have to move around the world.
Yeah.
You want to leave, you're going to have to get in your car, right? So as good as it is living there, that you can just not deal with a car on a daily basis, having to leave would suck. It's too bad. But again, we have to start in those local conversations, start from there to build from the ground up so that each place you can visit could be visited without a car. Again, that's going to take a long time, but one step at a time.
I kind of disagree with Chuck on the whole high speed rail thing, but you know,
I have my
gripes with him, and we can get into that in a different podcast.
Yeah.
I'll be his champion. I think thinking locally, right? Because if you need to drive around locally, you're probably going to drive instead of taking the train, depending, you know, what that distance is, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's like an either or thing or like a we can't do it at the same time kind of thing. But I do think that the most important action happens closer to home with this stuff. Like high-speed rail, Calgary to Edmonton, that's on my list. That's important to me. But first, there are a few trains I want within Calgary, you know, so that the city itself is more accessible. Because if I take a high-speed rail somewhere else and then I'm dumped off in the middle of nowhere and I have to, right? We touch on that a little bit in our bonus episode that we did yesterday with Christian Lenhart, is that you need that connectivity. It's really important. But I'm sure we'll have that conversation many, many, many other times.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
we'll get there. All right. Absolutely. Well, let's, right. Anything else we needed to mention on this point?
I don't think so.
All right, let's move on. So we got a question from Jen, and this is one that we answer in the future, at least Ethan and I, on episode 21. You can get subscribed if you want to listen to that one with Studio Leonardo. But Alex is going to answer this question. It is from Jen Hall, friend of the show. What is your favorite type of traffic calming?
My favorite type of traffic calming. I kind of said this jokingly before the show when we were chatting, but it is trains. Like, that is my favorite type of traffic calming.
Didn't you just talk about on that last podcast with Mr. Lenhart?
Yeah.
That we're trying to get rid of that traffic calming in Salt Lake City by removing those.
That's true, actually. I did say in there, I said the best train crossing is no train crossing. But I think trains underground, that can be great traffic calming. Just because there's a better way to get around. There's a more efficient way to get around. Good alternatives, I think, is the best traffic calming. Maybe a bike share. I want a bike share. I want like a good docked bike share in Calgary with e-bikes.
Is there no e-bikes yet?
We do have e-bikes.
Are they Lime?
No, they're Neuron. I think we might have Lime e-bikes as well. I think we have two. I want docked e-bikes. I want them with Calgary Transit branding, and I want them to be with the old kind of blue and purple color scheme that Calgary Transit used to have. That's what I want. That's my Christmas wish, so that I can bike around in the snow.
I like that.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. That's my answer. You guys.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting perspective. Because when we talked about it, we talk about it. Traffic calming, it's more about slowing the traffic, not necessarily removing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good alternatives. You know, who would want to be in a car when they could be on a bike?
Probably a lot of people think they want to be in a car.
You're right. You're right. Okay.
You think I want to be on your lib shit bike? I want my Ford F-350.
Freaking libtards.
What can I say? Yeah. All right. Yeah, Nick, you got a woog mug to wrap us up here?
I got a woog mug. And this is something that's been bothering me for a while, but it creeped up in the Vancouver Reddit recently. So I'm just going to try. I know we're in Radio Free Urbanism right now, but I'm going to try to tune in here to a different reality for just a minute or two so you can listen to the news over there. Here, let's see. There we go.
Two-wheeled menace is back on the streets, or rather, on the sidewalk, flying up and down with no concern for the pedestrians they buzz. We've had reports of electric scooters and bikes reaching speeds of 50 kilometers per hour, not only on the streets, but on the sidewalks, nearly killing dozens of people. Thankfully, nobody was injured, but some were startled by the gust of wind. Uber Eats Deliveristas expecting pedestrians to skedaddle as they zoom down the pavement with bubble tea in tow. We the people call on the authorities to crack down now. Mandatory license plates, registration and insurance. Throw the book at them. And for the citizens, make use of a stick just like the movie Big Daddy. Let's end this madness now. In other news, yet another cyclist was killed at the intersection of Thompson and Main. But don't worry, traffic is flowing just fine.
There we go. That's from an alternate reality where, oh wait, no, that's our reality. That's right. Sorry, I made this really stupid skit after being really pissed off about the things I was seeing on my local Reddit here in Vancouver, where there was multiple posts whining and bitching about e-bikes and scooters on the sidewalk. And I got to say, I understand.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be there. Shouldn't be speeding there. But it's the just disingenuous and in bad faith arguments about this subject. You know, people being super worried about it, saying that they see scooters going. All of those things that I said in that stupid little skit I did
mm-hmm.
were copied right from Reddit that people had said.
Wild.
That people on scooters and bikes are going 50 kilometers per hour. Bull fucking shit. Nobody's going that fast on a sidewalk on an e-bike. Like 30 kilometers, you're going to hit any kind of small bump or anything. It's going to be absolutely terrible. Like, no, people aren't going that fast. Like, calm the fuck down. It's ridiculous. But the thing that really pissed me off was just how much attention this got. And then yet another cyclist was killed in the same day that people were bitching about e-bikes and scooters, and fucking crickets. Nobody cares. Nobody's talking about it. We just move on with our fucking life because that's just the way it is. We got to accept the fact that people, cyclists and pedestrians, get killed. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But e-bikes and scooters and sidewalk, look out. They might startle you. Like, it's just really fucking annoying. And I get it. It's like, oh, it's this new thing. We don't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the silver lining here is, at least in those conversations about these, there was a lot of people saying, if you don't want them on the sidewalk, build good protected cycling infrastructure.
Yeah.
So thank you for all the people who commented that. But all of the ignorant assholes whining about this, like, go sniff your own butts, because, like, it's ridiculous. I'm sorry. Like,
amen.
We're out here. Like, people are dying. Like,
this isn't some womp womp.
Oh, I want a safe bike. Like, people are dying. Like,
yeah.
This is a, like, certified city Reddit moment. I don't know if you guys, like, I'm sure you guys check your local city's Reddit, but, like, I swear to God, every time I hear about a city's Reddit, because I don't use the site, I only hear negative things about, like, a local city's Reddit. It's just complaining about, like, the worst things possible. Like, nothing that's actually, like, a major issue. It's people complaining about, 90% of the time, it's people complaining about bike lanes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no winning.
No.
It's like, get off the road, you're in my way, or get off the sidewalk, right? You're going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
It's bicycle menace somehow blocking traffic and killing pedestrians at the same time.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So it all comes back to Vision Zero and the stuff that they're, you know, pointing at with this whole brick thing is to open people's eyes, right? To say there's ways to make this safer. We don't have to do this.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah.
I'm getting red in the face. I can feel it.
Well, somebody else had to rant on today's episode.
Absolutely.
So. It is a huge issue though. And yeah, as a cyclist, like, I don't want to be on the sidewalk. I don't want to be on the road. Like, please give me a separate lane.
And that's
give
where
me somewhere
differ
to
from
be.
Me, because as a cyclist, I think all cyclists are assholes, and I think everybody should be driving. Oh. Because as a cyclist myself, I represent the entire cycling community, and what the cycling community wants is 27 lane wide highways where I cannot cycle at all.
How much are they paying you? How much are they paying you to say that? To be a shill? To betray your own kind?
No comment.
No, okay. And to get serious for a moment, it is a problem.
Yeah.
Again, one of the Absolutely. Bigger solutions is to build quality, safe cycling infrastructure. That's where people will ride. And again, going further, it is also the delivery people that are going to be causing most of these problems. It's the gig economy forcing these people to work as fast and as hard as possible to make their money. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's like, oh, someone's just riding down the sidewalk block after block. More often than not, it's someone who's has business on that block riding up at the sidewalk. When I get home from work on my bike or my scooter, I go up on the sidewalk in front of a building. I go really slow, like no more than 10 kilometers an hour at most. But it's only right if somebody sees me coming out of the corner, that could very well be, you know, a bad interaction, at least in their mind.
Yeah.
Even though nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've had my eyes open to going back to Japan again, is the fact that people just ride on the sidewalk there.
Yeah.
Cyclists are on the sidewalk. That's the way it is. And it's totally fine. Everybody survives. It's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think the e-mobility is where it starts to get extra hairy anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's unnatural.
100%. Yeah.
Man wasn't meant to move at such speeds.
Unless in a metal cage.
Unless in a metal cage.
Unless in a metal cage.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
That's my wug mug for today.
Ethan, do you have a Wugmug?
What grinds my gears?
I do not have a Wugmug. I'm in a very chill mood today. I get great news about, you know, Seattle opening up some new transit. We'll probably cover this next week, but Los Angeles just did some new work on their new extension to the D line. As a foamer, I can be pretty happy.
All right.
As a transit enthusiast, things are going all right.
Well, I'm happy for you. Nick and I will be pissed off over here.
Just wait for 7 more days, because I can assure you that there is going to be some news that's going to piss me off within those 7 days.
Almost certainly. And I can't wait to get your fiery rage on next episode. And with that, we're gonna wrap this up. This is like the shortest episode we've ever done.
Well, in a while, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. But this was good, groovy, and grand. Ethan, where can we find you?
Ladies and gentlemen, you can find me at Climate and Transit on pretty much everything except for Twitter, which is at Climate Transit. Nick, where can we find you?
I'm at Nick Laporte on YouTube, or Nick the Door in other socials. Alex?
You can find me at Humane Cities on YouTube and Instagram. I'm being pretty active about this RCG upzoning stuff. So you will see a lot of reels about that if you follow me on Instagram.
If you want to see Alex in a trapper hat day after day, you know where to go.
Dude, yeah, it's going to snow again this weekend, so I'll be wearing the hat again. I like to think I look pretty cute in it. You know, I look a little bundled up, you know? So, yeah, if you want to see that, check me out on Instagram at Humane Cities. I've got some stuff coming on YouTube soon, I promise. And with that, yeah, thanks for listening.
Is he gonna say it?
Yeah.
Train good, car bad. All right, folks, we'll see you next week.
Two wheels good
and feet first.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. For more episodes, find us on your favorite podcatcher or on YouTube at Radio Free Urbanism.